We have a very important mission for tonight. We must use stealth and cunning to infiltrate the human world and retrieve Go-Gurt.
Go-Gurt. Okay, Batman.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious?
It's showtime.
It's the return of one of the most beloved parts of pop culture from our childhood. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. The first Turtles movie since, I don't know when, because they've been all real bad lately. So it's been a minute. I've kind of blocked out. I don't know about you guys. I've kind of blocked out that we did, in fact, do multiple episodes on the previous Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. Not the one from 1990. I'm talking the ones that came out in like 2017, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Like, or like Will Arnett is in them. Yeah. Right?
Last one we talked about, Brian, was like Out of the Shadows in 2016. Yeah. Which I actually kind of liked. Yeah.
I went looking.
If I remember.
I have no memory of any of these, really. I'll be honest with you. I went looking in our official sheet that we keep that keeps track of all the episodes we've done, because I was like surely we've done a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode in the past.
Oh, we've done like
1990, you know,
four or five maybe. We've done a lot, yeah.
And I searched in the sheet Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it came up with several entries. Like, oh, okay, I don't remember this really at all.
Well, I do.
It's been quite a while. So this is going to be a fun one. I'm excited to talk to you guys about this. Kent saw this, I think, before anyone else in the entire world. And so it's going to be, I think this will be fun. I think this will be a good one. We needed a guest to properly nerd out on this thing. So we're welcoming back, for the first time since he became a married man.
Absolutely.
How's it going, buddy?
I'm ready. Nothing to celebrate the maturity of being married than talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Right. You know? It's
just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing to celebrate for her.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots to celebrate for you, but
yeah, absolutely.
She made an honest man out of you.
That's right.
Yeah. I went in my Stephen Amell Casey Jones cosplay from Out of the Shadows. Didn't age well, to be honest. So, yeah. yeah. Fun
bad
fact.
Time,
you know, what's like the opposite of like the reconnaissance, you know, like the moment where you realize an actor you thought could be good is actually really terrible. Like that was like, that was the, the thing for Stephen Amell. I was like, oh, I liked Arrow. It's fine. You know, this guy could be something. No.
Yeah.
No, it was terrible.
Sure. No, it's okay. It's all right. We all have our L's. So, you know, I think half the people that I made American Treasures back when we used to do were later canceled. So I don't have a great track record with this sort of thing. And I'd like to preemptively apologize to Ryan Gosling for loving him so much, because I'm sure this will only lead to bad things for him eventually. Ariel,
apologize to whatever he does to someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, they're the victim.
Wow, Brian.
Your track record.
Siding with the abusers already.
That's
really, you're
me.
The problem.
I'll be better.
You'll be better. Yeah.
It's good. Ariel, I'm going to go to you first because I talk to Kent and Richard all the time, and I'm really tired of it. As we near 1,000 episodes here, we're close. This is around 950, just for what it's worth, guys. We're real close to 1,000 episodes. Pretty crazy.
Gotta get a plan in order.
Yeah, that's right. We gotta get cracking on this for the suicide pact. Give me your background on, you texted me a couple months ago, I was like, hey, if you don't have a guest for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I'd like, that's not true.
I demand to be on
Ninja Turtles, actually. You were pretty adamant about it and sent a lot of threatening letters. So, but you got your way, so that's the important part. What's your background with the Turtles, and what was it about this that made you want to be on the episode so much?
I know. Well, I did need to book some work. Otherwise, my benefits lapse, and you guys don't want us forming a union. So, I am about as big a fan of the Ninja Turtles as you can get without becoming an awkward YouTube documentary about the guy who spends $10,000 a year on merchandise. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Brian knows.
Yeah,
that
he's in our Discord, I think.
Shout out to Matt, right?
Yeah. Matt.
Now, there's, you know, I just love anything that much, but I am like a huge fan. I was born in 1990, about 30 years after Brian was. And so I grew up loving the initially loving the those 90s movies, the live action ones. I still to this day will like fight for that first one being like an actual good movie and not just like the other two or whatever, right? They're silly Star Wars-esque merchandising films, but the first one I think actually is pretty good. I mean, well, you know, I love the original Star Wars, but let's be clear, the prequels were not exactly, you know, high art. So, and we all know, you know,
tell the Senate,
you know, I might get that that's not how it happened from George over there, but we all know that they made those part of those movies is making a ton of money on merchandise. I love the Ninja Turtles. I'm a big Raphael fan. I have a pet tortoise named Raphael. Nice. I did grow up when I was like I think a preteen, like with one of the cartoons that came out in like 02 maybe or 04, whatever that iteration is. But I don't know. I've kind of just persisted with my fandom of them throughout the years. Like I'll rewatch the movies. That 07 movie was pretty fun. I've like read the comic run, which is really interesting, but yeah, you know, as an adult, what I actually find the most interesting part and kind of why I love the Turtles is there's this cracked video way back in the day of like, they're like, hey, what was your favorite Transformer? And it's Optimus Prime. And what was your favorite G.I. Joe? And it's Snake Eyes. And who's your favorite Power Ranger? Oh, it's the red one.
Sure, yeah.
And then, hey, who's your favorite Ninja Turtle? And then suddenly everybody has a different answer, right? It's because they're based off of these four personality like archetypes, right, which are the same personality archetypes that like the Hogwarts houses are based off of. And so like I love kind of like getting to know people who like the Ninja Turtles, who their favorite ones are, the group dynamics that are so much more interesting than like, you know, like the Power Rangers or the Transformers. You know exactly who the four turtles are, you know exactly how they should act in any kind of scenario that they're put in. And so when somebody puts the time in to make a good movie, I feel like the character work is usually really good. But I love the Turtles. Spoiler alert, I love this movie. It was excellent. And yeah, that's kind of like my whole background. Also, you know, I was an Asian American kid living in Jersey across the river from like across the bay from Staten Island. So like this, like though they represented like me growing up. Right. So like that okay. was, you know, me and totally. my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get into the personalities thing here in a minute. Because it has been so long since we've talked Turtles and I don't remember any of it. Real fast, Richard, background with the Turtles before we get into general thoughts here.
Turtles were, I was definitely, were my entire personality from like 4 to 5. Yeah. Turtles and baseball. I was a massive Turtles fan. It was the only really piece of kid stuff I ever engaged with. And then just went and pure sports Nazi stuff and stuff too. After that.
Yeah, I see you at the meetings. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Real. Yeah. Yeah, no, I got heavy into all that, you know, alt news sites and stuff. I was ahead of the game in 1994. No, but yeah, so it was a huge thing. And then I like, one day put it down, and it's something that I'm nostalgic for in terms of I was like almost too young for it to like really stick in terms of the content. Like I'm nostalgic for like the look and feel of it, but I remember almost nothing, if that makes sense. Totally. And I'm like you, Brian, I've seen things go in and out, the movies and stuff, but they're in one ear out the other kind of things. Nothing is really. There was the one, what, like 06, 07?
Yeah, 07, yeah.
I think 07.
I went and saw that one and was like TMNT, oh, yeah, man, I thought about this stuff. That one's called. Like 20, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But was excited for this one because of, you know, the Goldberg and Rogan seemed like the right type of writers for this. It seemed cool and a new take. I liked that there wasn't really a big like celebrity cast on the voices. I thought that was a great. They should sound young. Really leaned into, at least for those four, and then some other pieces later on. So yeah, it was definitely something I'm interested in. I'm always like a fan of the Turtles, but it's not. I don't like revisit it or like, you know. Sure. think about it a lot, but I always like root for it because I loved it when I was four.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. Kent, real fast, your background with the Turtles too.
Yeah, this franchise is probably the first thing that was ever really mine that I liked. You know, okay. I think the first property I liked was Muppets, but that was because it was force-fed to me by my parents when I was one and two. And then I was like, no, I want to like my own things. I think Turtles was probably the first thing that I actually liked and wanted the shirts, one of the action figures. And then it was kind of Batman around that time with the 89 Batman. And then once I discovered Star Wars, I mean, my youth was Star Wars from then on. But man, always liked the Turtles. And it's dead on to what Ariel was talking about. It's the personalities and how they play off each other and how there's four of them instead of two of them or three of them. It just adds such a different element than what you see with most cartoons. You always relate to a different turtle at a different time. I'm always a Leo guy. At different times, I'm like, man, I really like Donatello in this one, or Mikey was my favorite one in this one. And so, depending on my mood, I'm Raph, you know? And so that always has appealed to me. I've always liked the characters, but I've never felt like they've reached their full potential on screen, on TV. Mm. You know, I think a lot of the people that had, you know, attachment to it as a youth probably feel that way too. Like they'll go back and watch a few episodes and be like, oh, this is really only good to like very small children. And so I think they're still trying to play to the people that grew up on it and also bring in new fans. This is a great way to do that. But I think this is totally a step in the right direction, because the last one, I mean, with the Michael Bay influence and Megan Fox in the lead, like they're really just trying to bro this thing out and roid it up and trying to get this thing to the college age crowd. And I don't think that's necessarily the right move in terms of tone for these.
Yeah.
And this one, I mean, felt like a total refresh, reboot, totally new franchise, and all the better for it. Not to get spoilery or anything, but those are general thoughts.
I'll add to that, and then I'll very quickly give my kind of back, because I'm
one thing to that, though, Brian, is that the fact that this franchise is able to be rebooted, because there is no definitive version, really. Even though the cartoon version or the 1990 movie version is kind of definitive, I feel like people are still wanting a Nolan Dark Knight version of this, or, you know, like, oh, this is finally what it has the potential to be. And so that's why it lends itself to like every three years they can reboot it, and everyone's just like, okay, cool, yeah, because we still haven't seen the best of what this could be. And
I think part of that too is that it's not so serious.
The canon isn't serious.
I mean many times over the years about, and Ariel and I have had this conversation offline a lot too, of how bad fandom is just in general. it's how toxic it gets and how quickly it gets there. There are, I'm sure, very toxic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fanboys, because that's just the world that we live in. You can find toxicity revolving around, I think, literally anything at this point, but it isn't as, it doesn't seem like as mainstream and broad based. And maybe because this is as big of a fan base as this franchise or this property has, it's a smaller piece of the pie than Star Wars or Marvel or DC or whatever. But it's generally, I feel like, it's a pretty unserious property that can kind of like just enjoy. You can enjoy it if you like this stuff. You cannot enjoy it if you don't. And if we do it right, we can bring in some new people, or we can bring some people back in who bailed out in the Michael Bay era of this whole thing. One thing that I do really, and that this movie gets right, it sort of course corrects. I may have said this on the show before, and part of this I think is probably having a 10-year-old. I love The Dark Knight. I love Batman 89. I love a lot of these Marvel movies over the years. You know, I do worry that these things that are inherently four children. As the children grow up and become sort of in charge of this industry, we lean more and more towards making those movies and TV shows for those people and not for kids. And then ultimately you end up losing new audiences entirely. I mean, my kid does not give one rip about Superman because he's never really seen a Superman property. And I let him watch all kinds of movies. I'm sure that, like, if he was like, hey, I want to watch Man of Steel, like, okay, cool, no, you know, whatever. It's not that I'm worried about the content, but I don't know that he's going to gravitate towards it. And there's never been anything that has pulled him in. And honestly, Batman's the same way too. And I think that those last Turtles movies were geared so much more towards, and misguidedly, by the way, geared towards older, if not 20s and 30s, and not to kids. And I think this is a great opportunity to branch that out. It's, you know, that Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that was on Nickelodeon, I think, was relatively successful. And then they had there was another Rise movie on Netflix last year that I haven't watched. I don't know if any of you guys have seen, but Coop watched it recently and was kind of into it. This was a really great opportunity, I think, is my whole point, to get back to where it's accessible to kids and we can start to try to bring in a new audience to this whole thing. That seems like that was part of the plan for Rogan and Jeff Rowe and Goldberg. And I think that they were very successful on that. And as a result, this turns into something that was really enjoyable for me too. Like Star Wars was my first love. Ninja Turtles was my second love. And I cared so much about the Turtles until X-Men came out, you know, in whatever, 92. It really was Star Wars, Ninja Turtles, then X-Men in my first like 10 years. And the 1990 movie, again, I've probably said this before, that's like a Mount Rushmore childhood theater experience for me. I vividly remember going to see that and just feeling like, you know, this thing that I love so much is now finally on the big screen and stuff was a really cool experience. So to be able to go back to it with my kid, who now is interested on his own, it's not me being like, hey, come in here and watch this movie from 30 years ago. You know, it's something that he wants to see. The trailers for this were great. The advertising was great. The animation is really cool. This was a really smart decision. And I'm not too bummed out by the box office. It's doing fine. I wish that it was doing better because I think that this is a really strong play. I think that there's a lot of stuff here that was done right. And I would love for it to have paid off in a, you know, $75 million opening weekend or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what are you going to do? Greta's a machine at this point. So
Meg's going to Meg.
That's right. Yeah, the Meg. Who knew?
Ninja Turtles has actually pulled ahead of the Meg and after the weekend. It looks like Meg stands had their weekend and they're gone now, you know.
I mean, look, it's doing well. It's at like $55 million worldwide. It's only a $70 million budget. And
wow, so, 70 yeah, million! This looks incredible for that.
Yeah, absolutely, because they took their time. This was a movie that took several years to make, and who knows? We can always get milkshake ducked later, but like they tried hard to not overwork the visual artists, and wow, shocking concept, you know, that is. And they took their time with it, and I think it's gonna result in a moderate hit, if not a huge blockbuster hit. And it should relaunch, I think it should relaunch this franchise. Ariel, you said you loved it, so that's sort of general thoughts in general already, but give me a little more on what you liked about this thing, and we'll go ahead. You know what, we'll drop the spoiler alert here and just we can talk this movie out a little bit. So what'd you like about this that appealed to you as a longtime Ninja Turtles fan?
I think this is the first iteration that I've seen. I haven't seen Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is really the first iteration that I've watched where they really feel like kids, right? They really feel 15 years old. That, you know, it's, I think if I was 15 or 12 or whatever, I think I'd be obsessed with how these kids act. Besides the fact, like, I think they got the personalities like perfectly. Too many iterations of the Turtles. I think Leo and Raph are kind of like the same person, which is why they fight all the time. This one, they're completely not, right? But I think Ken said it. What makes this like special is it's just gorgeously animated. It is perfect. Mm. It feels like almost like what Ang Lee tried to do with the Hulk. Remember that? That weird like panel transition where he's like, I want to make a comic book, but it, like, I want it to make it look like a comic, which ended up looking ridiculous because it's live action. But anyway, like, it really looked like hand brushed art.
Sure.
It really felt like New York. And as somebody who goes there all the time and lives very close by and is a big part of that culture, is like, not always, most things don't get that. I think a lot of the MCU properties with like Miss Marvel and Luke Cage is horrendous at portraying Harlem. Miss Marvel is set in Jersey City.
It's a great point, the New Yorkness of this.
Yeah. Like the Spider-Man Sam Raimi movies kind of do it, almost a caricature, like, which this movie was also, but it's a cartoon, so it fits a lot better. But yeah, like, a lot of things they're just set in New York because they like the idea of it, where this really did feel in New York, the way the kids talked, right? I grew up in Jersey City and in this town called Bayonne also, which is of course right across the river from both New York City and Staten Island. So the language, the vernacular, the types of jokes they tell, the bacon, egg and cheese, like, all that stuff is just so authentic, even though it does sound like a caricature. Like that, no, like, people talk like that. That's real. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, Jackie Chan is in this, which I pegged his voice right away. Not a great time to have Ice Cube in your film, perhaps. But, you know, Stephen Amell, Ice Cube, we're not having great hitting percentage there with the Turtles cast. But no, I thought it was great. I think it very clearly was like a kid's movie. I have heard like rumors that this movie is more well received among young adults than it is children. I'm not super sure of that. I don't have kids at this moment, so I don't know. But yeah, I just think it was so fun, so funny, and really authentic, both to like to everything that makes the Turtles what they are. Except perhaps the ninja aspect, but I don't want to get into that.
I thought it was smart not to lean into the ninja aspect.
Oh, though. I agree.
You know, they really tried, especially in the Bay ones, like, oh, we need to make this the samurai and all this needs to be the core of what we're doing. No, they really don't even play that up at all. I mean, explain it. They were rejected from society and they had to defend themselves. It's not like a, I don't know, there's no real lore to it at all. It's like, no, we live in the sewer, so we have to know how to fight. That's really it. I loved that.
Yeah, it was a fun way to do to redo the origin story. I enjoyed that. I thought that was a sort of like a necessity kind of thing, and it was funny. It was a funny necessity too, which I thought was a good change from I don't remember the origin story from most of the, I mean, I do for the, from the 90 movie. I don't really remember.
There's different, I mean, there's different origins. There's like, there's part. One that Splinter was like an actual samurai that got transferred into a rat. There's one where he's a rat that was in a samurai. I think that's a 90 one where he was a rat in the dojo.
Yeah.
The dojo.
Yeah.
And he taught himself karate by watching the dojo.
Right. Right. So. Yeah. I thought this was a funny adaptation of that, or change of that, of like having him order the VHSs and stuff,
so
like
good.
That. That was a good bit, I thought. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. Richard, what do you like about this thing? What makes this a maybe a return to form, or maybe better? I don't know. Where are you at with this, and what makes it good for you?
Yeah. You know, I come in with my own biases because we talked about this on the show before, but I don't really like animation, especially the older I get. Like, I hate it more and more. I don't know why. I'm just uncomfortable watching it. Just one of those things that sets in, like love handles. So I come into these like already at like a negative two, but this one's so good. It got up, me up to like an eight, you know, on it. Because it's, I did think, have the thought, I do have a kid, but he's not in movie watching time yet. And so I did have the thought a few times of like, I don't know if, would an 8 year old love this? I don't know. It's kind of, thinky and, you know, it definitely is playing to us. I felt very much like the audience for it, maybe a little old for it, but it kind of felt like it was playing to young adults. So, yeah, I mean, but it was as animated Ninja Turtle movies go, about as good as I think you can do, which is, for me, which is, you know, great. And I agree. I think it's done well at the box office. You're right. I wish it had been rewarded. It's not like it's really an original, so, it, you know. Those are the ones I really want to do well, but at least took IP in an interesting way and was made thoughtfully, and not just to, you know, to Ariel's point, slang them plastic toys, though this will. And all that. Yeah, so I wish it had been a massive, you know, Barbie-ish hit for those folks, but, you know, we only have so much capacity for movies these days. And so I think that's that. But, yeah, I wish this might have been better to come out maybe pre-Barbie-heimer.
Maybe, but
I don't know.
Sure. I think there's an element 2020. Of people see a trailer for this, or there's like, they're doing Ninja Turtles again, and there's just reboot sequel fatigue with this because of the failed Michael Bay project. Yeah. Even if this is the most definitive thing ever, the failures of the past have hurt this one, unfortunately. Where it's not like Spider-Man, where when Into the Spider-Verse came out, pretty much the last Spider-Mans we'd seen was the Tom Holland one. So everyone was super hyped on Spider-Man and then went into that one. It's like, oh, this makes it even better. So now this is setting the bar high, you know, whereas the Michael Bay ones really pulled this franchise back years. You know, the 2007 one was well received, even though it wasn't a huge hit. And then to go live action with it and to do it that way with those character designs, I'll
like
never
monstrous
understand.
Hulks.
Like, honestly, just the most roided out. like, it would be super inefficient at karate because they're so muscular. Like, you can't even move. It didn't even make sense. And so, to step back into animation, I think, is a genius move. And you can do so much with this. When it dawned on me why it looks like paint, because the turtles are named after painters, it's like, that's the most... It's the most obvious, easy thing to do, but it went so far in this, and the way they pushed it, in a similar sense like they do with Spider-Verse and with Lego Movie, of using the medium itself as part of the scene design, like the motion blur of the camera. When the camera would whip, it would look like smeared paint. And sometimes when a light would shine, it would have like blotches of paint that you could see with the eye. I mean, I loved that. That stylistic choice, and that's probably why they were able to make this super cheap, because they figured out pretty early on probably a look that they liked, and they're like, okay, can we do this for cheap? And it looks like 2D, honestly. It might not even be 3D animations, but I don't know. It just, I thought the whole concept was out there in terms of what we're used to with turtles. I mean, these Baxter Stockman looks insane. Superfly looks crazy. I mean, these are like very stylized characters, but I think the turtles themselves aren't, which is a smart choice.
I agree.
Kind of go back to the original, and then to have the stylistic choice of the paint on top of it to make this a really vibrant animated experience and not just like a typical CG movie or a typical 2D movie was, I mean, the icing on the cake. Not to mention, like, this was such a fun script. I mean, it was, some people said the references were overblown, but I think kids talking references, kids are talking about Drake and all that stuff now. So I didn't find that super cringy. I thought that was
natural
for the kids.
Yeah.
It felt natural to the kids' age at that time, especially kids that have probably only lived through the internet and VHS tapes or whatever in their sewer, right? So they don't have much of a frame of reference for how people should act in society. I thought that was fantastic. You know, April O'Neil, her story of like, okay, the only thing I'm required with April O'Neil is like, she needs to be a journalist. That's all I care about. Just make her a journalist in some way, because that's, to me, all I remembered and cared about the character was that she was a reporter. And so I thought the love interest slash reporter thing was interesting. And it was Leo this time around. Normally Mikey's the one that's all starstruck by women, or, you know, maybe I think Donnie and in one of the last most recent ones was. And so to make Leo the leader, but also it's like these kids are just trying to figure out how to fit in with friends. It's kind of like the Richie Rich thing of, they'll never, these normal society will never understand me because I'm different. And same with the movie they're watching in the park, which I thought was a fantastic scene where they go and watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off. People won't accept me for who I am, so I have to rebel. But when people find out who we really are, they will accept me. And that's kind of the conclusion they come to in this of, no one will like us if they find out who we really are, but actually they did anyway, and they didn't have to put on this whole act the entire time. So the April, the high schoolness of it all was totally dead on for, I think, what Seth Rogen was going for, which was like a super bad style Ninja Turtle movie. This felt like the South Park characters or something, you know, the four boys. It felt really had that Goonies energy to it. And I don't know if I had felt that with Ninja Turtles or considered like, oh, that should be the vibe. And it is, once they did that, I was like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. The animation on this is so great. I loved, we talked about this a little bit with Spider-Verse, and then on the news episode we did in July, because we talked a bit about Elemental, which has actually turned out to be pretty good for Disney. I think
Sneaky,
it crossed
Sneaky
recently, and it's had good staying power, and it's done pretty well. But the point that I
daycare is like
it was
crazy.
Never number one, but it was always number just that five, like every weekend, right? It's like,
well, there just there wasn't a contender between early June
for kids,
and this for that kind of kids movie. You have that Ruby Gilman, which was just DOA, and but there wasn't anything else that it was going to draw. You're exactly right, Richard. Like, it's, I'm sure that there were daycares all across the country that are taking their, you know, it's movie day and taking the kids to see that and stuff. I mean, that was like half of my jobs in college and whatnot. It's been a big hit. But this was another example to me of how far behind now Disney Pixar, just the animation style of things, are at this point. Because when you have Spider-Verse and Puss in Boots and then this movie, and there's others that fall into this category too, they're just doing, it's not just that it's like advanced animation, you know, it's just different. It looks a little bit different than what, and everything in the Pixar universe basically looks the same and looks like it is contained within its own universe and whatnot. And then you see this, and like, I think you guys, Ariel and Kent, you both said it. It's like, it's really cool to see the contrast, I thought, between the turtles and the rest of the characters, and the clean design of the turtles for the most part versus some of these other characters that are kind of off centered,
grotesque,
and janky, and grotesque. And that's a great word for this. I thought that was a really cool choice, and made. This was very appealing to the eye, and without being eye over,
and also giving the turtles like a distinct look too. Really, like, each impressive. Of them had their own shape,
sure,
and distinct personality look that matched their personality. Whereas even in the '90s ones, they all looked the same except they had different colors. That was it.
Different armbands, right? Yeah. Arby, you're a bit. You've always been a big Rogan Goldberg guy. What did we think about the script for this thing?
I was not shocked there was like seven writers on this when it was over. It felt like a script to a story a little bit. I mean, it's an animated movie, so that's normally the case. It's very rare that these come from a like single auteur making animations. Normally kind of more of a corporate, not in a bad way, like that, you know, the Pixar thing where a bunch of people in a room toss out ideas and talk and write it together communally. Yeah, it kind of had a little bit of that feel to it. But yeah, I think it certainly had, you know, it's so funny that Rogan is really good at crafting in story and crafting in really distinct characters from each other. It's a very kind of veteran written movie, and I mean that as a compliment. It doesn't feel like some young upstart writes his turtle movie. It felt like people that really know what they're doing.
It's going to be an interesting. It's going to be an interesting adapted, you know, screenplay Oscar race between this Barbie and Oppenheimer. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Best picture, Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Best adapted screenplay.
I think. I mean, Goldberg and Rogan have so much going on. I think they probably did just do the story and then hand this off to some screenwriters to do. Sure. I think they steered this thing in the right direction. And yeah, I mean, it felt inspired by that, especially the casting of everyone but the turtles. Felt like the Rogan all-stars with Paul Rudd and Rose Byrne, even Ice Cube, felt like natural. What'd you guys think of Jackie Chan? Isn't that interesting that when he did Rush Hour, which we just talked about, he could barely speak English enough to even do the movie, and now he's doing English voiceover roles? Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Chan's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to let you go on this one, Ariel. Give me 10 seconds. I am so here for the Chanissance. I'm so here for it that I watched this awful movie that he just did with John and enjoyed him in it. I mean, the rest of it was crap, but
which movie?
Chan was fun. He's in a movie that's on Netflix, like with John Cena, Hidden Strike,
oh,
I think.
Oh, man.
Like literally my review on Letterboxd was, in 6 years, somebody's going to be like, hey, remember that time Jackie Chan did a movie with John Cena? And you're gonna be like, no.
I do remember that.
I mean, it's
John
so... Cena. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that, too. But... yeah, it's I'm really happy to see Jackie Chan get in. He's really good in this. I think his character, and it's yours, Ariel, to go for as long as you want. I think his character might be the best written character of this bunch. I don't think that this is like a great script or story or whatever. I think it's missing in story elements a little bit, to where something like Amazing Spider-Man every freaking time, Spider-Verse, does really well, I think, is story side of things better than this does. But I felt like Splinter was a very well developed, fleshed out character right off the bat, and that was awesome. So Ariel, the floor is yours, my friend.
I love Jackie. I recently saw these like posts like, yeah, who's the greatest stunt actor of all time? Is it Tom Cruise or is it Keanu? And like, Cruise is great, right? But like, it's Jackie Chan. Like, the dude is insane. But like, you know, a lot of people don't realize this. He's like, he's not a martial artist. He's a comedian. He learned Kung Fu in opera school. And so, like, I love these moments where, you know, I think he was, I think as Splinter, like he was very funny. Like, he was very funny. And they incorporated in that one scene, that one fight scene, his like very physical comedy, which I think obviously is Jackie Chan's greatest strength. But, you know, there's a reason why his most famous movies are like the comedies. He's not Jet Li. He's not Bruce Lee. He's always been the clown. And I think like the more he gets to be his goofy, fun loving self, like usually the better the movie is.
Yeah,
I can go forever on Jackie, definitely. So I'm just gonna leave it there.
I loved the milking bit that they kept bringing back was super funny. Yes. The thing about Chris Pine was so good. Yes. I mean,
Chris's was funny.
He had some great delivery.
The don't you use that word in this house? The ratting him out.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Yeah, that was a very I thought that was maybe the best part again of the character design on these. It was great. He was great. Brought a lot of heart to the scene. I think it was like a good, I know animation is different than when you're actually, you know, on a set or whatever with the people that you're acting with, but it was kind of grounding to have these four newcomers, very young performers, balanced off of that with Jackie Chan, this very seasoned veteran actor, and just has a lot of poise even as a voice actor, and I thought it was great. I love that combination. Kent, I know you want to talk about the needle drops.
Ooh, love it.
Loved the soundtrack. First of all, the score was from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Richard, fantastic. Oh my gosh.
My guys,
I can't believe they let them name the songs what they did. If you go look on the soundtrack, yeah. They got some curse words in the names of the song. So I think it's just like, yeah, whatever, Trent. As long as you do the music, do whatever else you want. We don't care. I thought it was set the vibe great, especially for a New York style movie, which I don't think he's really done before. You really felt it. The Ante Up needle drop was great, but the one that I was like, man, it's gave me a new appreciation for this song. I've always liked the song, but the way they used it, the sequence, mm-hmm. No Diggity was so good. The scene, the scene of the year,
walking around the house
with them fighting and kind of first coming into their powers, and then the way it cut back to April on Baby You're Perfect, and it was so perfect. Mm-hmm. It felt like a music video or something, and I love that. And then to close it out with Can I Kick It is always great. I mean, always a good needle drop.
And
become overused, but
I love that A Tribe Called Quest is getting some play recently. I think this we got to have a break on on Can I Kick It for a couple of years. They got a lot of great songs in the repertoire. Let's pull some other ones out, because that song rules. That's one of my
blurb was Can I Kick It? No, you can't.
yeah.
On the Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, that might be one of my 20 or 30 favorite songs ever. I love that song, but it's been seriously overdone over the last few years. Which again, I'm glad that it's getting some play, but there's other songs in their discography to go to. No Diggity was perfect. That was a perfect selection and in that scene. I saw that's apparently a really hard song to get for movies or TV or whatever, just to get the licensing for, because apparently one of the writers is estranged from the rest of the group. And so they were kind of running up against it. Like, they shot it. Obviously, they made
edited
the
whole scene to the song. That would be... so tough to replace.
Yeah, so that's what Jeff Rose said. He was like, we basically cut in a bunch of different songs to try out, because we knew may not happen. Clarence came through at the last. I saw too. This was in a Slash Film article, but that I forgot because they're not movies that I really love all that much. But No Diggity is in Pitch Perfect. Or
I think
Pitch
the
Perfect
first
2
one yeah.
mm-hmm. as well. Okay, and that was like, in the middle of filming the scene, they got clearance to do it. Like, they were just like, okay, let's go ahead and film this thing, because we really
so
are hoping
weird
this is going to come
because
through.
Because they can make making so much more money. Yeah. I know.
It's always a thing.
It's so rare to turn down an opportunity like that when you're a band like Blackstreet, who hasn't been doing anything.
Right.
Like, why?
Right. Yeah. Like, I know. When I saw the headline of why it's so... I assumed it was Dre. I assumed it was a Dr. Dre thing, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's one of the members of the band is estranged. But that was awesome, man. It was like I said, I've been singing that around the house for the last, like, 5 days.
The way that scene is shot...
Everybody in my house is tired of it.
The way that scene is shot is reminiscent of the arcade
side-scrolling
games.
Side-scrolling,
yeah. It's so... so clever. Mm-hmm. Such a brilliantly shot and edited scene with that music.
Yeah.
And with the really rooftops cool. and everything. I mean, gosh, it was so good. And the way it all comes together in the story like that, with April doing her thing and them doing theirs, I mean, not the most obvious choice for a song, but that's what great needle drops are. Mm-hmm. Ones that aren't the obvious choice.
Yeah. Yes.
And Guardians was full of those. And it just hit them and they hit the tone perfect. Yeah. I love the crayon animation sequence too. In this, where they're the flashback crayons.
Yeah, that was cool.
I thought that was great. And Ice Cube's line, where he's like, ooh, I love that. I like that. That was so funny to me. I don't know why I laughed. When he gets real angry that he didn't come up with the word ooze for the substance, it was funny. And then their lair being a cosmic bowling alley looked so good in the animation with all the neon, with the darkness. Oh, man, it was... It was very well thought out. I appreciated that.
Yeah, that was good. Couple last things here, and you may have some other stuff you want to get to, Kent. Ariel, what do we think of holding Shredder for the sequel? Shredder is obviously like the guy, the villain for that you
the
think
Dark
of.
The Dark Knight move.
Yeah. When you think of the Turtles, and he gets the kind of the Joker card thing at the end of this, rather than being the I thought that was a little bit bold to go Superfly instead of Shredder, or even instead of like Krang, I guess. Where'd you fall on this? Is that good move, bad move, or hey, it worked out, so it's good? You know what I mean? Like I guess there's a world where this makes $12 million, and it's like, well, cool, but we're never gonna make that sequel, so it doesn't matter. But what did you think about holding? What did you think about Superfly, and then what did you think about holding Shredder
till
the next one?
I think holding Shredder out is a good idea, and there's two reasons. One. Okay. Fans like myself, and people who love the Turtles, like anytime there's a Turtles versus Shredder, like thing, you always go back to the 1990 version when they're fighting on the rooftop, which is just like, it's awesome. And that came out 30 years ago. Holy cow.
33.
Anyway,
yeah.
33 years ago. But two, you always run into the Iron Man 1 problem with superhero and comic book stuff, where the origin of the heroes is always the origin of the villain to save time, right? Mm. And when you do the Shredder, it forces you in...
the Shredder.
By the way, the vanilla ice drop I had some fun with there also. Ninja Rap, you know, represent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so by not doing the Shredder... My second point is, it allows you to move away from the weird ninjutsu angle with Splinter and them and so I do love that they use the mutants, because I do think the mutants are the most underrepresented or most poorly used aspects of the Turtles in these kind of big. Like movies, like sure, Bebop and Rocksteady were in that 2016 movie, but like nobody watched it and nobody likes it really. Ninja Turtles, the Secret of the Ooze or whatever that came out, I don't remember what year. You know, like they had, I think it's Toka and Reza, but like, I don't know, these movies were so cool. You saw a bunch of them that you never ever see in TMNT movies, like Leatherhead. And there's still more who you haven't seen. So, like, I think it was a great idea. Obviously, it's very reminiscent of Batman Begins with the Joker card at the very end. And, of course, you know, I do expect, you know, like, Oscar noms for the sequel, just like the Dark Knight got. So, but yeah, I thought it was a good idea.
Big Simmer score.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Kent, where do we go from here? Obviously, we expect Shredder's going to be involved in the next one. It was a very Batman Begins way of teasing that, which I dug. I think this is a movie that... Let me rephrase that. I think this is a movie where you can make a good case that the sequel is going to do better. I think you're right that there's a little bit of they're redoing that again. I think it'll have really good word of mouth. It's getting really great reviews, all these sorts of things. So I think this is one that even if Paramount is a little disappointed in where the opening weekend ended up, and maybe they're not, I don't know. It's going to be profitable, and I think you can make a pretty good case that the sequel is a good idea, not just not throwing good money after bad, or bad money after good, excuse me. Where do you want to see this go from here?
You got to think that they had a plan with Shredder. Or what do you use them in this one, right? If Paramount's like, all right, well,
right.
You get one shot and you don't get a sequel unless it's a huge success. They would have just put Shredder in this one, which I think is why they did it in the first one, the Michael Bay first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually ended up making some money. And they're like, crap, what do we do now? And then they had
the
Brad Garrett thing and ended up cramming it the second one with villains because they didn't really have the Shredder card to play like they wanted. So... I think it's smart to hold it back, but I think you only do that if you know there's something else coming, whether it's a series. I've heard there's a series that's going to be based on this maybe or something. And I know there's more plans in addition to this movie at the outset. And so when you have that commitment, I just wonder what they got up their sleeves. They've probably got some. They had Jackie Chan for Splinter. I mean, who do you get for Shredder? You know, it's gonna have to be, you know, somebody with a lot of gravitas and a lot of cachet in this world. So
Arnold,
that would be good. I don't know.
Feel weird. Ooh. I'm just kidding.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
Richard was saying he was hoping it was Mel Gibson, but
I mean, just bring Steven, bring back Stephen Amell.
Drunk Mel Gibson. I was clear. I said drunk Mel Gibson. Did not want him sober. He's Richard boring sober.
Richard's.
I like Mel firing off those
immediately
tapes.
Immediately texted us when Spacey got off and was like, "You Ninja Turtle sequel guy."
He does make a good villain. I'll give him that.
Yeah. I saw
how
he's got
funny
a new movie
was Paul Rudd as yeah. the Gecko. It was great, just dude. Like Paul the forgetting awesome. Sarah Marshall yeah. surfer bro. Bit
yeah yes did. Yeah yeah
and Post Malone as the Philly, he only sang like two times was good. Rose Byrne yeah. having like two lines of
good bit.
Like hello or good day mate or something mm-hmm. as Leatherhead
right
it's not just Shredder, there's Krang, yeah. there's like Metalhead still, you know, there's some Bebop. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean obviously Casey Jones is lingering out there too, that's not really a villain, but they'll bring him.
Even the
Mel is
free for work. I'm telling you.
And the Maya Rudolph yeah. villain of it feels like it's going to be a thing too.
Sure.
Like the overarching
yeah, for
villain
sure.
of I'm trying to take over the world and get the ooze to take over the world is still
yeah.
apparent in this. So.
Oh yeah. So she right. she's an Utrom. Yeah. She's like Krang.
You got to okay. go Technodrome right. with the sequel, sense. Right?
I think they do Shredder Foot Clan then Technodrome.
And Technodrome for the third one.
For the third,
Technodrome yeah. is basically like the big Death Star of Ninja Turtles.
Yeah,
and so it's like right. the big villain base layer type thing. So yeah, it'd be cool to see that their take on that in animation. But yeah, maybe you save that for the third one. You give us a little bit of Shredder in the second one, and then save Krang right. / Technodrome for the last one. That's what I would do.
That's good. I think
Krang's going to be hilarious in this though. I mean, you know, I actually thought Rogan was like a little too old to understand turtles, but when he was talking about it, he said, I was 5 when the animated series debuted and I was 8 when the first movie came out. It's like, wow, you were in prime age for the original run of this. So I always thought he was just, you know, since he's older, way older than me, like way older than turtles, but I was like, wow, I must have been young when I was into it, and he was, I guess, like Coop's age when it was really hitting Brian. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess they really understood this. And you're right, Richard, in the fact that it's not just like let's go sell action figures. Like they actually care about this franchise and wanted it to be good and put a lot of thought into this. And it's more than I can say for Michael Bay Productions on almost anything.
Yeah,
what a concept.
It's good.
Yes.
Good.
That's all I got.
All right. Let's grade this thing. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought the animation was awesome. I'm pumped for a return of the turtles into the pop culture. My kid loved this. It was a really good time. I did think it, like I said, it was missing a little bit on the story element as compared to some of the other like really good animated movies we've seen over the years. But I'm pumped for where this is gonna go over the next few years. So I'm gonna give this a strong A-. Richard, going to you first.
I will go solid down the middle B.
Okay.
I'm gonna go A on it because I do think that this could be pushed further and could be better. You know, I think even though this is like probably the best Turtles movie in terms of like a good movie, I still think like you can make it a fantastic, great movie with this. So I'm going to go A in the hopes that the sequel is an A+.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm going to go A. I do think, like Kent, like you said, definitely room for improvement. Like there's a world that exists.
Great
where
origin.
Yeah. There's a world that exists where this is as good as like the Spider-Verse movies, right? That's
sure.
Seeing what you can do with this now that's not outside the realm of possibility. But I do think it's almost as good as they possibly could have made this first one. So I think it definitely gets that kind of A kind of curve to the grade.
Sure. go see this. I think that this is a movie that, like I said, I think the sequel does better than this one does.
Yeah.
But people, you know, we're about to be in a stretch where there's like nothing to watch for like a month and a half, 2 months. So, go see this movie. I think it's good. This isn't, I don't know, I'll probably look stupid by next week. It is also a movie that you could reasonably see like smaller drops per week and kind of sticks around for a little bit. As people say, hey, did you see the Turtles movie? And their friends are like, yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot, you know. We'll see. It also could fade fast because summer's over or just about, and some of the audience is going to be, you know, back in school and all that good stuff. But yeah, this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before we get out of here, let's do a quick weekly.
Weekly recommends.
Richard, start us off, my friend.
I will do. You know, I've semi-retired from TV over the last few years, but one of the few shows that I religiously watch is back for season 3. Only Murders in the Building is back. Episodes dropping on the Hulu. And so yeah, Only Murders in the Building. It's nice. Fantastic, and if you're not watching it, I recommend watching it firmly. I don't know what that means, but I recommend very firmly that you watch
there
it.
We
that
go.
Sounds.
They took a show that had basically 98% critic approval rating, and they added Meryl Streep to it. So I think it's going to have like 195% right. approval rating.
And if my wife, she was a fan of the show, but if she wasn't that much in, they also added Paul Rudd and Jesse Williams. So
yeah, they did add Paul Rudd at the end of
right in her wheelhouse too. So
nice.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. Awesome. I'm excited to revisit. That's
Dips for dinner, guys. Dips.
Is this the last season of it?
So good.
I don't think so.
They've said.
I don't think they've committed anything in either direction.
Yeah.
I think that's one that everyone involved really likes making because you're in New York.
They probably just have this same set every season, you know, the apartment building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great. So I think that's one that may go on a couple more because I don't think anyone that's doing it is hating doing it.
And I mean, obviously Martin and Short get along quite well and have for very ever. For very ever, that's not a word. For very long time.
Firmly.
firmly, very ever. They also seem to really love Selena, and she loves her.
Yeah.
I think they just really seem to dig really working together. So it's good.
The coolest thing ever is that my podcast idea is Martin Short said that after every day of filming, he and Steve Martin share a car to the apartment building they stay at. And they have a bottle of white wine in the back seat and just sort of talk about the day. And I'm like, that
yeah, there
should
we
be
go.
A podcast.
That's the one.
That's we don't need another podcast, but we should get rid of 10,000 of them, including ours, and have that one.
We would gladly sacrifice to make that happen. Kent, weekly recommend from you.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend a classic TV show that I've kind of had in the background, revisiting a few episodes here and there, and love it. And there's a chance that some of our listeners have not ever given it a chance. It's The X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
Greatness. And one episode we watched recently that hit home was season 1, episode Fallen Angel. It was about Duchovny or Dermot Mulroney or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. There's no way to definitively
know.
There's
no way to know, yeah.
I think that's Dylan McDermott.
You're right.
Life's great mystery.
Dylan McDermott stumbles upon like a UFO crash, and it's basically this like government cover up. You know, he stumbles upon like a recovery operation, if you will. So, if I don't know if you're following the news, that's what people are saying. Oh, there are real recovery operations. So, it's basically an episode about what's going on kind of right now, and it's pretty interesting. So, Fallen Angel is the episode, but it's a series. I mean, gosh. A total zeitgeist show. I mean, one of the best shows ever for drama, especially science fiction, maybe the best show besides like Star Trek. ever. Love the show and give it a shot. 11 seasons. The last two are only like 10 episodes and they're more recent, but
yeah,
give it a shot. Some prime 90s network TV drama for you.
Yeah. It's a big undertaking, but it's being rebooted with is it Coogler? I feel like there's something happening where they're going to reboot this thing. And it sounds awesome. So like if that news came out like maybe 3 or 5 months
ago. Yeah, it is Coogler.
So if you're interested, okay. Yeah. Okay. That sounds awesome. If you're interested in knowing and like kind of like what's the vibe here, how does this work, and or kind of seeing some of it, but the 11 seasons is too much, which I get because it's like old network TV 11 seasons too, you know, it's like 22 episodes a season for most of it. Because I know Weiser is doing this. If you just Google it, because I don't have a link to it, but you can find a list of the important episodes and just kind of scroll through, because there is a lot of filler, and I'm pretty sure you can even kind of pick and choose. Are you interested in the Monster of the Week episodes, which were always the ones that I liked the most?
And there's more arc ones,
Or are you more interested? Yeah, or are you more interested in the overarching story with the alien?
Honestly, season 10
and the Smoking Man and all that.
Season
10
is kind of like a mini series. It's got a lot of Roswell stuff, you know. Yeah. It obviously doesn't have that 90s charm, but because it's made recently, but it's a great intro to the show in 6 episodes. And it's a man, I didn't know they were rebooting it. That's
X-Files
exciting.
Is great, man.
I always thought this would work or could work better as a movie series than it ever did. You know, it had movies, but like imagine a David Fincher X-Files, you know, or something like a real, we're going, you know, deep levels of the government conspiracy stuff would be.
Letier.
I mean, he's got my vote.
Yeah, X-Files rules. That's one of the major, the predecessors to the peak TV bit that we got in the 2000s. There's a like a direct line from, you know, Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, X-Files, and a couple of other shows leads directly to Mad Men.
Basically, made Fox.
And
this and The Simpsons are what made Fox a success.
Exactly. Yeah.
Guys, hear me out, right?
Yeah.
Louis Leterrier.
Yep.
Fast X-Files.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Stop talking. Let's get our lawyers on the line. We gotta go to
Area 51.
Just see him peeling across the desert.
Out there, and it's family.
All right, I'm all in.
The family is out there.
There we go. Perfect. Okay, stop talking. Don't give it away. All right, Ariel, what's your weekly recommendation?
I do have one planned, but you mentioned Coop not knowing Superman. I got to tell you to go check out My Adventure with Superman.
That's true. Yeah.
My recommend.
Is that for kids, though? I thought it was more like adult, like about? Swim type animation.
It is Adult Swim, but nothing in it is adult. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he's roommates with Jimmy. Things get, you know, experimenting a couple times.
But that's canon. That,
you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're best friends and they're roommates.
More ways than one.
The time has come for my immense, immense geekdom to come out on the show. August 31st. Believe me, my love for this franchise that I'm about to talk about dwarfs my love for superheroes and Ninja Turtles and Godzilla and Kaiju and all that stuff.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Pacific Rim.
No.
Go ahead.
No. August 31st on Netflix, the live action One Piece show comes out.
Okay.
And.
Nice. Yeah.
Live action anime almost never works. This kind of looks fun, and it could be fun. We could get 2 seasons and then we'll never see it again. Watch the trailer. If it interests you, I encourage you to watch it. But like the anime / comic book manga of One Piece is gonna go down as one of the greatest pieces of literature ever. And it is currently the third highest selling series of all time, only behind, no, it's, I think it's second now, only behind the original run of Superman, which is currently going on. So best selling. He's top, the author's top 10 in sales of all books, above names like J.K. Rowling, and only behind names like Agatha Christie, you know, like, but it is, I truly, it's incredible. It's great. Definitely try out the live action series when it comes out on August 31st. If you're a fan, look me up in the MAM VIP Discord. You know, if you were to look up several BookTube people who like started it during the pandemic, because it's like, oh, we can't go anywhere, what's something that I could read that's 1,000 chapters long? Oh, it's One Piece. They'll tell you it's incredible, and they're hooked and they love it. And it's got a bad rap because anime's got a bad rap. It's got a bad rap because it's too cartoony. As somebody who loves literature, who loves fantasy, who loves anime, who loves, and who can understand what good art is and what bad art is, it's truly one of the best pieces of literature like ever made. So that's my soapbox. I haven't been on the pod in a while. I probably won't be on until this sequel to TMNT comes out, or the people demand a One Piece episode from the live action Netflix. But there it
I'm
is.
I'm surprised you're excited for it, because I always hear that it's not good to adapt anime and manga into live action. It never works. You think it's going to work?
I mean, what I think is, one, he actually made them reshoot stuff, like a little bit. So everything kind of has to go through his okay, the main author's, whose last name is Oda, O-D-A. Two, the cast is incredible. Like, in the same way that, like, I don't know, like the kids who played the turtles, like, feel so authentic to who those turtles are. Like, the cast really feels authentic to the characters, and if all else fails, it's gonna look really cool, because they actually like built the ships and built the sets for the show. It looks better than every other anime live action thing they've made at Netflix, which is the lowest of bars. But it could be terrible, and I'm going to watch it, and I might not like it, but nothing's going to, you know, make me not like the source material. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it's good for you. 'Cause as long as I've known you, you've talked about One Piece. So, I hope this goes.
I've well. Always been more of a two piece guy myself.
Yeah.
Yahtzee.
Yeah. Yeah. We know we've seen your Instagram. All right. For me, weekly recommend. I try not to double up recommends. I don't want to recommend something that one of you guys has wrecked in the past. Try to mix it up a little bit. But I finally finished The Bear season 2, and it's the best season of TV I've seen this year. So that's my recommend. I loved season 1, and season 2
season
just
691
blew
of
it out of the
yet?
Water. The so
191.
It was so good.
191 seasons.
No,
no, that's One Piece. So.
Right.
The Bear's awesome.
But yeah, check out The Bear on Hulu. That Christmas episode was tense but so good. I think Mulaney may have won a guest Emmy there with his little monologue. Was great. Odenkirk was great. I love Cousin Richie so much, and then they were like, hey, what if every needle drop was just like the most dad rock song ever? I'm like, heck yeah, bro. Like, let's do this. So lots of Pearl Jam, lots of Wilco, lots of REM. It was great time. So that's by far the best season of TV I've seen this year. So check that out on Hulu if you haven't yet. All right. This has been fun. Good conversation. Good talking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem with you fellas. Thanks for being here, Ariel. Really appreciate you adding some insight to this whole thing. We're always happy to have you back. You don't have to wait for the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Pacific Rim movie or whatever else. So I'm very close to showing Coop Pac Rim, though, by the way. I'll let you know. I'll let you know how it goes. Last week, Coop randomly was like, I want to watch a Godzilla movie. Like, oh, okay, cool. And we watched the Godzilla from 2014 or whatever that was. And he was like, it ended. And he just looked at me and was like, he held his hand up and did like the circle motion. Like, all
right. Oh, that way that one ends on the cliff. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, I need another one right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch King of the Monsters. I left for a meeting during King of the Monsters. I came back home and he was like, I watched Kong vs. Godzilla while you were gone. I'm like, okay. All right. So you're all in. And the next day is like Skull Island. Let's do it. So Pac Rim's coming. I know he'll enjoy that stuff too. So anyway, thanks for being here. I really appreciate you. If you are not a VIP, you want to do that, right? Like, I mean, come on. Get more of this. Get more conversation. Get access to our exclusive Discord, get, I don't know, hundreds of episodes in our back catalog, and get an extra episode every single week. This week, we are talking about George Lucas's American Graffiti, which is a really cool movie, and I'm interested to talk to you guys about that. We talked about Rush Hour last week. We're doing a disaster retrospective series in the VIP this year, where we're talking about movies that were huge bombs at the box office, like Waterworld and The Postman. And this month in August, we'll be talking about one of the biggest train wreck disaster movies of all time, Cutthroat Island. So I'm very excited about that in a couple of weeks. Go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP, sign up there, and get more of Mad About Movies. And then next week we'll be back. And I think next week we're going to talk Meg 2,
The Trench.
Until then, stay safe. We'll see you at the cinema.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya.
They're calling again.